From Quality Radio Productions, it's another edition of the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell with another hour of sounds from the Golden Age of Radio, coming to you from the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. We'll open today's program with an episode of Songs by Sinatra. This was a music and variety show hosted by a young Frank Sinatra. The series ran on CBS in the mid-1940s and was sponsored by Old Gold Cigarettes. This broadcast is from February 20th of 1946, and Frank's special guest, Louisiana Governor Jimmy Davis and his Sunshine Serenaders. So we get to hear some country and western stylings mixed in with the usual mid-40s pop music fare. It's an episode of Songs by Sinatra, opening up this edition of the Upstate Radio Theater.
Night and day, you are the one, only you need the moon or under the sun.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, from Palm Springs, California, Old Gold Cigarettes, the treasure of them all, presents Frank Sinatra, the only man in the world who can crawl into a cigarette holder and pull his Old Gold in after him.
Marvin, please, a little more dignity, my boy. We're in Palm Springs, California's last stronghold of formality.
Oh, I'm sorry, boss. I guess I just lost my head.
You look better that way. Incidentally, Marvin, we're formally inaugurating the new CBS station in Palm Springs, KCMJ, and what's more, my lad, we have a governor as our guest. Governor Jimmy Davis of the state of Louisiana.
Not the Jimmy Davis who writes all those wonderful cowboy and hillbilly songs.
Yes, sir, no one else. The Jerome Kern of the cowboys, the Beethoven of the bayous. But hey, how's everybody like it here in Palm Springs? Axel, what do you think of the flora?
The flora, Frank?
They're sensational, especially in those new French sunsuits.
Axel, you surprise me. I thought you came to Palm Springs to ride the desert trails and the hikes of the canyons, and to fight your way up the mountainside to the land of eternal snow.
In the grocery store yet, French sunsuits.
Oh, well. Marvin, I trust that you, at least, have come to Palm Springs for the beauty and warmth of the desert.
Yes, I have, boss. But speaking of the desert, what makes it so darn dry?
No apple honey, you fool, you. No apple honey. Play, Axel.
Every time you're near a rose, aren't you glad that you got a nose? And if the dawn is fresh with dew, aren't you glad you're you? When a meadow lark appears, aren't you glad that you got two ears? And if your heart is singing too, aren't you glad you're you? You can see a summer sky, or touch a friendly hand, taste an apple pie, pardon the grammar, but ain't life grand? And when you wake up each morn, aren't you glad that you were born? Think what you've got the whole day through, aren't you glad you're you? You can see a summer sky, or touch a friendly hand, or taste an apple pie. Pardon the grammar, but ain't life grand? And when you wake up each morn, aren't you glad that you were born? Think what you've got the whole day through. Hey, aren't you glad you're you?
Frank Sinatra's arrival today in Palm Springs is an occasion for great excitement. Get the picture, folks. In front of the hotel where Frank is registered, a line has formed that, believe me, is 6 feet long. As our bus stops, hundreds of girls crowd around, breathlessly waiting for their idol to step forth. They're impatient as one by one the orchestra and production staff leave the bus. Then comes the great moment. An electric shock sweeps the crowd, and a little redhead clenches her fists and screams,
"It's him! It's him! Girls, it's Axel Stardle!"
Look at that startle. What a dirty trick, giving away nylon bobby socks. How can I compete with that?
Frank needs a new bathing suit for his stay in Palm Springs, so he drops into a local store.
Hey, buddy, I want to rent a bathing suit. You got one that'll fit me?
Hey, Mac, bring out that little number that was too small for Margaret O'Brien.
Back at the hotel, Frank receives a delegation of Palm Springs dignitaries.
Mr. Sinatra, we of the American Legion here in Palm Springs are raising funds for a memorial to our fighting men.
What's it going to be, sir? Not a monument that the fellas can't use, I hope.
Not on your life. We're building a fine auditorium and recreation hall for all the veterans who are hospitalized here on the desert.
Wonderful, gentlemen. You can count me in.
So, friends, that's why we're in Palm Springs tonight, to inaugurate the new CBS station KCMJ and help the Legion raise funds for recreational facilities for our convalescing veterans.
Say, anybody want to buy a song, hey? I got a big new one here, taken from Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto. Put her on sale, Axel.
The moon is there for us to share, but where are you? A night like this, could weave a memory and every kiss could start a dream for two. Full moon and empty arms, tonight I'll use the magic moon to wish upon, and the next full moon, if my one wish comes true, my empty arms will be filled with you.
Now, how about some more of the Wednesday night corn that you shuck each week to the tune of Skip the Maloo? Say, I hear tell tonight that it concerns a beanstalk blonde named Bee.
I've got a gal whose name is Bee.
Bee's as tall as a redwood tree.
When Bee sits down, she's 8'3".
But she's got personality.
Now, that Bee is my kind of woman, Pipers. Cause personality's the thing. In fact, personality's the song. Why don't you shut up and go home?
Papa Door was on the ballroom floor, said all the gentlemen, obviously. The madam has the cutest.
think of all the books about the various looks. What was it made of the toast of Paris? She had a well-developed personality. What did Romeo see in Juliet or Piero in Pierrot or Jupiter in Juno?
Juno?
And when Salome danced and had the boys entranced, no doubt it must have been easy to see
that she knew how to use her
personality.
Walks in, she has them in a spin, and not because of her voice goes a ring. It's cause she's got the perfect
what?
Personality.
And why certain girls offer certain things,
like sable coats, motorboats, and wedding rings,
by men who wear their spats right.
That's right.
It doesn't help at all to get a guy to call and talk of a family tree, unless you got a super duper personality.
Thanks to the Pied Pipers. You know, these Pipers are selling records hand over tea kettle these days, and no wonder. With every Pied Piper platter, you get a kiss from Junie Hutton and a pat of Wisconsin butter. And now, friends, tonight's famous guest, Louisiana's great songwriting governor, Governor Jimmy Davis. Governor Davis, it's wonderful to have you here in California with us. But tell me, sir, aren't you a long way from home?
Well, not the way a good Louisianan looks at it, Frank.
What do you mean, Governor?
Frank, do you realize that Louisiana used to take in everything from the Alleghenies west to the Rockies and everything north from the Gulf of Mexico to the sources of the Ohio, Missouri, and Red Rivers?
That was sure some territory. So how come Louisiana pulled in her boundaries?
Well, we just got fed up with all of those Los Angeles city limit signs on our property.
I know what you mean. Governor, tell me some more about Louisiana. What all do you grow down there?
Well, Louisiana is very rich in rice, sugar cane, cotton, corn, potatoes, and a lot of other things, including oranges.
Did you say oranges, sir?
Louisiana grows the finest oranges in America.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Governor, please. You're not going to tell me that Louisiana oranges are as big as California oranges.
Oh, well, I might not go that far, Frank, but I will say that Louisiana oranges are so big that one man is assigned to every orange.
One man is assigned... What's his job, Governor?
Well, after it's cut down, he rolls it down the river, right on down to New Orleans.
Quite a story. Governor, I also understand that Louisiana grows some mighty big shrimp. Are those shrimp really that big?
Well, Frank, Monday I gave a Louisiana shrimp dinner to 100 members of the Los Angeles Press.
Yes.
Tuesday, I gave a Louisiana shrimp dinner to 400 members of the All Year Club.
Yes.
And tonight, after the show, I would like to have given a Louisiana shrimp dinner to the entire city of Palm Springs, but,
What's your problem, Governor?
Well, after all, I only brought one shrimp along.
Well, naturally, I understand the appetites down here. Governor, before you and your sunshine serenaders take off in one of your own tunes, I'd like to ask you, sir, a very important question.
Far away, my boy.
You know, I'm interested in politics myself, and my question is this. What do I need to run for public office?
Frank, you need a deep and sincere concern for the welfare of your fellow man.
I'm interested.
You need sound convictions and the courage of your convictions.
I'm interested.
And above all, Frank, you need strength and stamina.
Up to that point, I was interested. But, Governor, honestly, all of us are interested in hearing you and the boys and that big record of yours, There's a New Moon Over My Shoulder. Louisiana, are you listening, y'all? Thank you.
There's
There's a new moon over my shoulder and an old love in my heart. I remember now that I'm older what you told me the day we had to part. You promised with the new moon you'd be coming back to me, but many moons have passed and I'm waiting patiently. There's a new moon over my shoulder and an old love in my heart.
Thank you, Governor Davis and the Sunshine Serenaders. Governor, speaking of sunshine, you know, of course, you're not getting out of here without singing that all-time favorite that you wrote, namely, You Are My Sunshine.
Well, I've got news for you, Frank. Tonight, you're going to sing it along with me now. That's an executive order.
You may be sorry, but tell me, how about your constituents? Won't they resent my hitching a ride on your famous tune?
My boy, after hearing us in a duet, my constituents will be unanimous in one remark, and I quote, "If the governor was really smart, he'd lay back and let Sinatra do all the singing."
Governor, I may just move to Louisiana, add another vote to your big collection. Shall we knock it, sir?
The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. But when I woke, dear, I was mistaken. So I hung my head and cried. You're my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
I'll always love you and make you happy if you will only say the same. But if you leave me to love another, you'll regret it all someday.
My sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
the night, dear. Oh, no room for an encore, huh? Well, that's good. Thank you very much, Governor Jimmy Davis. Neighbors, maybe you've never met Jerome Kern in person, but I know that you're well acquainted with his wonderful music. Death came along last fall and put the blotter to that songwriting pen of his. But not until he put another book of great American music up there on the shelf, alongside the works of Stephen Foster and George Gershwin. And don't worry about that book picking up any dust or cobwebs, because it'll be in circulation for a long, long time. But tonight it's out on loan to us, and we're turning to one of Jerry's finest. You are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. You are the breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights a star. The dearest things I know are what you are. Someday happy arms will hold you, and someday I'll know that moment divine when all the things you are much obliged there, Pied Pipers, and Axel Stordahl, I'm indebted to you for another four-bell arrangement. Holy smokes, it's theme time. Hey, Ax, theme in for a few bars and fade for talk.
Put your dreams away for another day. In your heart, wishing on a star never got you far. And so it's time to make a new start. Dreams at night fade before you. Then I'll have the right to adore you. Let your kiss confess this is happiness, darling, and put all your dreams away.
Neighbors, a number of us in Hollywood are planning to go around to the public schools to hammer away at the fact that Americans come in all creeds and nationalities. You see, we believe that no American should have to apologize for his race or his religion or suffer because of it. These little hatreds burning in America are like brush fires. And if we put them out in time, fine. But if we don't, we may have a national five-alarm fire on our hands. Brotherhood Week is a good time to squirt cold water on these hatreds. So grab hold of the fire hose, folks. Good night.
Next week, we move the old gold sign a bit to stage left to make room for Jimmy Durante's nose. Yes, Frank's guest next Wednesday is that lovable man with the gentle voice and the gargantuan schnoz. And every Wednesday is the night for Songs by Sinatra, presented by Old Gold, whose choice tobaccos are specially conditioned to help guard against cigarette dryness and to give you more smoking pleasure. And say, don't let little annoyances get you down. Why be irritated? Light an Old Gold. The Frank Sinatra Show is written by Glenn Wheaton and produced and directed for Old Gold by Man Holliner. Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From February 20th, 1946, on CBS, an episode of Songs by Sinatra, starring Frank Sinatra when he was just 30 years old, and special guest for that program, Louisiana Governor Jimmy Davis. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, Sounds from the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Don't forget to check out our blog and website, where you can learn much more about each radio theater broadcast, view a detailed playlist of every show, and you can also listen to episodes of the radio theater on demand, whenever and wherever you like. All of that is available for you at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. And don't forget to send email to the program anytime you have questions, comments, or suggestions for the show. I'd love to hear from you. The email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. For our final offering this hour, we'll turn to The Devil and Mr. O. This was a syndicated series which ran for 26 weeks in late 1971 and early 1972, at a time when there was renewed interest in the golden age of radio. The 70s produced many old-time radio revival shows, and this was one of them. This was a series of lights-out broadcasts from the early 1940s on CBS, which, of course, were hosted by and written by, for the most part, Arch Obler, with updated commentary from Mr. Obler. The series ran for 26 weeks on various radio stations. These broadcasts that I have in my library were recorded off WRVR 106.7 FM in New York City. And this is program number 22 in the series, originally broadcast February 11th, 1972. It's entitled Rocket from Manhattan, a tale of the strange, the supernatural, and the supernormal. It's The Devil and Mr. O on the Upstate Radio Theater.
Lights out for The Devil and Mr. O. Turn out your lights now. the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly so that if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now. Jobler. In a few moments, you're going to hear what might be called a happening. I wrote it almost a lifetime ago, and yet I know you'll agree with me after you hear it. It's as if I wrote it this very morning. Part of what I wrote over 25 long years ago has already become fact. The rest of the chilling prophecy, well, the happening happens after a word from your station.
Saints, feed a leaf. Right here in my hand.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that a new leaf?
Yes, it is a new leaf.
Here, I'm going to turn over a new leaf. Get it? Leaf? New?
What does that mean, to turn over a new leaf?
Well, in serious,
mm-hmm.
means that you're going to have a little change.
From what to what?
From bad to good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, suppose somebody was crying.
They could switch from tears to a smile.
Suppose they were lonely.
They could go from loneliness to having somebody to play with.
Well, suppose somebody wasn't loved. Could they turn over a new leaf?
They could go from not loving somebody to loving somebody.
How do they do that?
All they have to do is try to love somebody.
Just try?
Yeah. It's easy to love people when you try.
Love makes all things new again. Hey, what was that?
Another sound of love from the Franciscans.
And now, if you haven't already done so, turn off your lights now and listen to Rocket from Manhattan.
Hi, Doc. How about joining us?
Yes, Doctor. Don't you think it's about time we had a little celebration?
There's a great deal of work to be done.
Work's over, Doctor. 24 hours more and we're back.
Yes, Doctor. We'll be back. We've done it. Complete.
In 24 hours.
If you're worried about our landing, I'm not. You worried, Reynolds?
No, sir. Everything's in perfect order.
Sure, Doc. There's going to be a round trip. Anyway, there's 24 hours before we have to worry about that. Doctor.
I'll grant you that our adventure's gone well.
Doc, pardon the expression, but you're a gloomy Joe.
I am a realist.
But, Doctor, the possibilities of anything's going wrong are remote. Surely we're entitled to relax a little and relish the fact of what we've done.
Yeah, we've done it, Doc. Even if we never get back, we've done it. We've been to the moon, and it'll always be there on the books.
But we are out of radio contact with the Earth.
Yes, sir. But we are on course. Doc, what is wrong?
Wrong? What should be wrong?
Well, the kid's right, Doc. Ever since we made the circle and started back all these days, you've been acting as if we didn't make it. We've gone 243,000 miles, and we're 3/4 of the way back, and we're in, Doc. We're in. So what's the matter with you?
How old were you, Major, when the Second World War ended?
Oh, about 5. What's that got to do?
And you, Reynolds, you weren't even born.
No, sir.
I was 21 on that day in New Mexico when they set off the first chain reaction. 21.
Doc, you mean to say you were in at the beginning of it?
Of course he was. Dr. Chamberlain was one of the original research men in the atomic bomb project back in 45. The only one of them alive today.
Well, what do you know? So that's why you wanted to make this trip, Doc. I mean, you...
Yes, Major. You wanted it as a substitution for what you missed as a boy. The excitement and glory of war.
Oh, now, Doc.
It's true, and Reynolds here is young and idealistic. And the scientific wonder of it was what he wanted. And I? I was there at the birth of an era. Now atomic power is driving me into space, back to the Earth where it all began. And I'm thinking...
Yeah, Doc?
That's not pertinent to any of this. We've no time to discuss our emotions. There's work to be done.
Airspeed 23486.
Airspeed 23486.
Any radio contact, Reynolds?
No, sir.
How about that, Doc?
Unfortunate, but not very vital. We're definitely on course.
How much longer will it be, Doc?
10 hours. Why do you laugh, Major?
I was just thinking about how many millions of telescopes are turned in our direction.
Yes?
What you said a few hours ago. I mean about my wanting the excitement and adventure. That's true, you know. I'm 60 years old, and I guess I just lived for this chance. The Army hadn't okayed my going. Well, here I am. Once we land, I'll admit frankly I'm going to cash in on every bit of it and have myself a time. You know something? I get to feeling kind of depressed when I think it'll soon be over. Well, there's no reason for depression, is there?
I couldn't answer that. You've been wondering, undoubtedly, why ever since we left the moon, I've been acting strangely.
That's right.
I've never believed in predestination, and yet there's been sort of a motivation of fate in my life. At 21, I was part of that research team trying to adapt atomic power to military purposes. When that first bomb went off over the New Mexico desert, a newspaper man repeated the words, "What hath God wrought?" And no one quite knew. I've been waiting 55 years for the answer. I think I found it a few hours ago on the moon. And it's an answer full of horror.
Close the oxygen valve. That's why you're yawning.
Oh, the Major's sure sleeping.
Yes.
It's only a few more hours, isn't it?
Yes.
Before, you spoke of finding an answer on the moon. And then you didn't say any more. Well, I've been thinking about it. I was wondering if it was something that the Major couldn't understand. And that's why you didn't speak of it further.
And now you want to know.
Yes, sir. I haven't lived anywhere as long as you two have, but my life has been built around atomic power. But now, all of a sudden, the way you spoke before, as if all our research has been criminal. Do you mean that?
Collision radar!
Get at it.
What's the matter? What's the matter?
Object approaching?
Where?
15 degrees west. There it is.
Meteorite.
It's a meteorite.
That was the closest.
It was indeed.
It'd be sardonic indeed to collide with a meteorite at this point in our journey.
I use a stronger word than sardonic, Doctor.
Yeah, like fatal.
It's all clear.
Well, I'd better get back to...
No, Reynolds. Reynolds, you asked me a question before, and I want to answer it. You too, Major Russell. I want you to hear this.
Sure.
Reynolds overheard what I said to you, that I'd found the answer to a very old question on the moon. He said that he felt that somehow I thought all of the research on atomic power had been criminal. No, young man, I don't believe that. Not at all. Criminal to know more about a way of nature? No. The answer I found was something else. I haven't even an answer, perhaps only a theory. When we came within 100 miles of the moon and then began to de-accelerate, to turn back, what did we see through the observation ports?
Well, Doc, we saw...
No, please, let me tell you what I saw. The craters of the moon. Great, gigantic craters, and as we came closer and closer, the look of them was so familiar. Not because I had seen them through telescopes and in photographs, but... for some reason that I couldn't quite understand. Craters of the moon, and suddenly, at the very moment when we'd come as close as we dared and our ship swung in an orbit to return, suddenly I knew. It was a memory of another crater I had seen 55 years before in New Mexico from an observation plane high over the ground a few hours after the first atomic bomb had lit the sky with a new sun. Yes. The crater in the crust of the Earth that bomb had left was the same as the craters of the moon. Do you understand? The crater our bomb had left on the Earth was the same as the craters on the moon.
So what? I don't get it.
Yes, Doctor. What are you getting at? Well, the crater in that desert was a thousandth of the size of the ones you're talking about.
I suddenly began to think. Was it not possible that the moon had gone through the same evolutionary processes as our Earth before our Earth? Yes. Wasn't it possible that men had come into being on the moon, developed their own civilization, had known scientific progress, even as we have, but long before we Earthmen had known it?
Say, Doc!
You do understand. These men of the moon had discovered the secret of atomic power long before we did, and then had used it to blast and to tear each other. Yes. And the craters on the moon, that terrible devastation, was the record of the destruction of their civilization. A final war which had burned up the very atmosphere and left the moon a dead planet circling endlessly through an airless sky.
All right, Doctor. Presuming your theory is correct that the moon men had started through a war, a chain atomic reaction that they couldn't stop, well, what of it? It indicates that they were fools.
Yeah, that's it. Fools.
Are we any wiser?
We leave our The Devil and Mr. O's story of Rocket from Manhattan for a short pause.
When you've got a family to feed, there are ways to cut high food costs, and we'd like to tell you an economical, tasty way to serve top-quality meat dishes. Today's answer is high-protein ham, H-A-M, Krakus and Atalanta imported Polish ham. When you buy Krakus or Atalanta Polish ham, there's no waste, no gristle or bone to throw away, and no water added. It's all lean, flavorful ham, down to the last tasty bit. You can even use the small amount of jellied broth to make soups more nourishing, or to create delicious gravies, and warm weather is time for relaxing. Feeding your family can be less work, and entertaining will be more fun if you'll get the Polish ham habit. It's great for all outdoor or indoor dining, for snacks, picnics, and for every good food occasion. And Polish ham may just be the most economical answer to hot or cold meals your family and guests will love. It's the easiest food you can prepare because Polish ham is fully cooked when you buy it. So if you wish, just zip open the tin, slice, serve, and enjoy from end to end.
And now back to our story of Rocket from Manhattan.
Airspeed, 2,482.
You'd better cut it down.
Right, how much?
About 15%.
Right.
You get anything, Reynolds?
No, sir.
Would you come here a moment?
Yes, sir.
Will you help me with this port covering?
Yes, sir.
Here, there.
All right.
Well, got to take a look, huh?
Yes, that's it. There she is.
Mama Earth. 6 more hours, eh, Doctor?
Or less.
Sure we haven't made a mistake and headed for Venus.
What are you...
That was just a bad joke, Doc. Now, there's no two ways about it. The outline of the continents, we can't make any mistake about that being our home address. I wonder how much they can see of us. What are we, 6,000-7,000 miles out? You know, this reminds me of the time about 25 years ago. The Army sent me up to 1,000 miles to take observation photographs. Well, you remember how the atomic reaction motors were then. We got up about 500 feet.
Major.
What? What?
Look down. Look.
What? Well, I don't see anything.
Look, I'll tell you. Reynolds, come here.
What's the matter? Something wrong?
Well, the doctor says there's...
Reynolds, look. Do you see?
Yes. What is it?
I see it, too. Bright lights going on and off. What's going on down there?
Doctor, are they signaling us? Are they signaling?
It's 6,000 miles. Why? Why should they?
That's right. There's no such plan.
Look at it. It is lights going on and off.
But they're all from one area.
Can you make out where?
North America.
Then they are signals. The candle in the window.
Your own question. At 6,000 miles?
Wait a minute.
Are they explosions?
Explosions? Major Doctor, is that it? Are they explosions?
I don't know.
CQ, CQ, hello, 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 CQ, CQ. Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor, I can't raise anyone.
Doc, come here.
Yes, but...
Look, the closer we get, they are explosions.
3 more hours, we'll know.
I want to know now. Reynolds, what's the matter with you? Why can't you make radio contact?
I'm doing everything I can.
Major.
Doc, what are...
Craters. Look, craters.
Craters? At this altitude, you couldn't possibly...
After each flash, I do see them.
Okay, what does it mean? Well, what are you looking at me like that for? What does it mean?
Doctor, Major, something's coming through.
Oh, what about time?
I can only hear it faintly.
What?
Please, let me listen. United States... What?
Reynolds, what is it?
Tell us. I couldn't quite make out. He said...
Said what?
Tell us. War. He said war. Blasting the United States off the face of the earth. Blasting... It's a joke, isn't it? Isn't it?
What are they sending now? What now?
It began an hour ago. No warning. Projectiles, radio controlled. Point of origin unknown. Oh, it stopped again, the transmission.
That's enough. Doctor, did you hear it was an attack without warning?
The explosions are increasing in frequency.
Reynolds, is there anything more coming through?
No, nothing. Yes, they started transmission again.
All right, let's have it quick.
It's some station in Midwest. I can't get the call letters.
Who cares?
He says it's hell. Ground shaking. No bombs landed near, but air reconnaissance. It's so garbled I can hardly make out.
Well.
It started an hour ago. Everything burning. Now it stopped again. There's nothing.
Doctor, in heaven's name, what do you think it's all about? Stop staring out of the window and talk to me.
What are they doing?
What do you mean, what are they doing? They're bombing us, blasting us. It's war, but who? I've got to find out. Reynolds, find out who.
Well, it's no use. There's no transmission.
Doctor, those bombs, where are they coming from? Can't you tell by the trajectory?
At this distance? And what difference does the face of the enemy make? It's happening, that's all.
Smashed them. I always said we should have smashed them. Exterminated them 50 years ago.
Oh, they were so peaceful for so many years. And
the flashes are increasing in frequency.
Reynolds, get on that radio.
No, I'll try again.
I've got to know who. The devils. We had agreements with everyone. The international devils. All of them. Call them devils. I don't even know who they are. Reynolds! You got anything?
No, I don't.
Doctor, faster. Let's get down there faster. Let's open it up.
Well, you know better than that. We're entering atmosphere. Increased speed and we'd burn up like a meteorite.
But I'm an army man. All my life I've been
trained. Something's coming through.
What?
The bombs? Nothing? I can hardly make it out.
Keep at it.
Panic? Paratroopers?
Who?
Last message from United States of... It's ended. There is no more.
If we'd only get down there faster.
Only 500 more miles.
Look at it down there. Our Air Force, protective measures, what happened to them?
What happened?
Doctor, you, why don't you say something? We'll just sit there for hours watching. This isn't a scientific experiment going on down there. They're blasting us to pieces. Us. Your atomic bomb, the great secret. Hold it over the world and have peace forever. You said that. Yes, you. I was a kid then. I heard you say it over the radio when they gave you a medal. Hold it over the world and have peace forever. Well, what do you got to say now?
We had a wonderful 55 years.
What?
Everybody had a wonderful time.
Reynolds, what's the matter with him? He's gone.
No. Let him finish.
First, we hung the criminals 55 years ago. And as soon as their body stopped swinging, we left the crowd and each went back to his own house and shut the door.
You said the peace would hold forever.
I said it because I thought that when the secret was put away, the people of the world would remember the terror. I said to myself, now, surely now that they've seen the possibility of the disintegration of their earth, they'll be drawn together once again into the family of men as it must have been in the beginning. I forgot what years could do. I forgot how quickly forgetfulness comes. I forgot that in only a few years, Hiroshima and Nagasaki would be only yesterday's sensations for a nation eager for sensations for today. You keep asking me who is sending those bombs against us. Who? I tell you, we're sending them against ourselves. Yes, because had we made our way of life something more than a confused dream of shiny machines and happy endings, those bombs of hatred and revenge would not be flying at us. I said the peace would hold forever because I thought that out of that war at last men had learned that there was no defense against hatred and revenge, but the defense of education for the unity of people. It was a race, gentlemen, against time. And we wasted our last 55 years running backwards on a track of chromium and plastics. And so we've lost forever.
No. We've never lost.
Look, the blasts are increasing in frequency. There's nothing left. Nothing.
We'll start someplace else. We'll build...
Doctor, look. The color of the blast.
Oh, dear God.
What? What?
Doctor, it's nitrogen, isn't it?
Nitrogen, what?
The fools, the everlasting fools, I warn.
The blast, more and more.
They started something they couldn't end. The color of the blast, they've set off hydrogen atoms.
I don't know what you...
We used uranium, plutonium, and when the initial blast was over, that was all. But hydrogen, that's part of life. One reaction sets off the other like setting off an endless chain until... Look down there.
Blast. Faster and faster.
They're spreading.
The fools. God help the fools. God help the fools.
Where?
It happened.
A sheet of flame. Around the earth. Doctor, tell me, what is it? What was it? Tell me.
It burned up all the atmosphere.
Burned up? Reynolds, what does he mean?
The chain reaction burned up all the air.
Moonlight.
Major, Major, the left jet.
It's all right, it's all right. All right. Where are we going? Can we go down there?
There is no air, no life. The moon, the earth, the same.
How much fuel?
There is the gauge.
2-3 hours?
Yes. Yes, I think that's right. Isn't it, Major?
Yeah.
What do we do?
You ask that question now? The Major no longer asks it. Do you know the answer, Major?
Sure. We'll circle around. Then we'll crash.
No. No, it'll be all right, my boy. My words again. Have peace forever.
This is Mr. O.R. Jobler. The play has ended. Just a play. Something out of my imagination written over a quarter of a century ago. Part of what I imagined then has come to pass. I'm sure you pray with me that the rest of it is a very false prophecy. Let's talk about our next play. There is no prophecy in that one. I was in England. I met a titled old goat who was very weary of his very sweet little wife. And out of that family affair comes next week's play. But first, an interlude for a message.
This is Red Buttons. With a suggestion on how you can help Johnny Horizon and his campaign to clean up America for our nation's 200th birthday and help restore the natural beauty of our land. Why not organize cleanup projects for local parks, recreation areas, or the block where you live? The booklet, How to Conduct a Cleanup Campaign, will help you get started. To get this free booklet, write Johnny Horizon Program, Washington, D.C., 20240.
This is Celeste Holm. The formal ceasefire in Vietnam has not ended the suffering. The youngest victims of the war need help from the United Nations Children's Fund. UNICEF has been helping in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia for 20 years, helping them with food, medical care, housing, and education. They must now work harder than ever to rebuild young lives. In Indochina, as in Bangladesh, UNICEF will be there long after the fighting ends. They need your help. Please send your check to UNICEF, New York, 10017.
This is Mr. O again. To that listener who wrote me from Boston, yes, I recently wrote a novel, and if you shake your bookseller hard enough, you might be able to get a copy of it. Its title is House on Fire, and Bartholomew House published it. Now about next week's play. It's titled Hollywood Visitor, and for you devotees of horror, yes, that's what it is. Next time.
An episode of Lights Out, as repackaged for the early 70s syndicated series The Devil and Mr. O, Mr. O being R. Jobler. Rocket from Manhattan was the name of the story. That broadcast from February 11th, 1972, as recorded off WRVR-FM in New York City. And that will wrap it up for this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to your company again soon for another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.